This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, action, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com.
Manus, god of primal darkness, as thou hast decreed, so have I done. The hands of fate have doomed this man. Thy will is done.
Downtown Toronto headquarters, is episode 48, Manus, Hands of Fate. The infamous Manos.
Yes, the great
Much
Manos.
Much maligned.
Yes.
Manos, the hand.
The hand
Talk
of Manos.
Talk to the hand, as we just don't understand. Yeah. Mystery science theater staple.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, this is like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, this movie is considered by many to be one of the worst movies ever made. 1.9 rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Very famous Mystery Science Theater 3000 episode,
yeah,
where they skewered the shit out of this thing. And, I mean, we're going to skewer it a bit ourselves. I mean, you know, Manos, it's...
But it's not without its charms.
It's not without its charms.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is, it's a 16-minute movie that could easily have been distilled to about 15 minutes,
yeah,
because there's long stretches where just nothing
is
happening.
Yeah, just driving through the,
El Paso,
the wilds of Texas.
Yeah,
it's just a tumbleweed central.
Yeah, yeah, just driving and driving and
driving.
And these inexplicable shots of a couple making out that had absolutely nothing to do with the plot whatsoever.
Yeah.
That
so we got,
eats up about 7 or 8 minutes, you
yeah
know. But
we got this family, a man and wife. The guy is a little bit... he's got this sort of bad sweater. He looks a bit like Bing Crosby with his pants like really hiked up high. He's got a wife, a young daughter.
He also looks a bit like George C. Scott, though,
yeah,
in the face. But yeah, he's got a good-looking wife.
Yeah. And a young daughter, Debbie, and this little, and their little dog, too. It's like a very Toto-esque dog.
Peppy. Was that the
Peppy?
Peppy,
yeah.
So, yeah, it's Michael's a father.
Yeah.
I don't call
Helen,
name.
Who cares?
Yeah, and then we got Debbie and Peppy.
Yeah.
And they're trying to find, look, this is the 60s, he's a salaryman, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he's,
they're trying to find this lodge.
Travel lodge.
They're on vacation.
They're on vacation, right?
Why you drive through, the arid Texas desert to be on vacation?
And,
who knows? That's not explained.
Yeah, and without the aid of a road map.
Of course.
There's no GPS back then,
nope,
obviously, but no road map. So they get lost. And at one point they encounter a cop.
They're pulled over by these overzealous cops who, consider ticketing them for having a tail light out, and then they let them go.
Well, it's kind of funny because the cop goes... no excuses. I don't get this. And then he goes, oh, come on, officer. Can't you let us go?
Sure.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
why not? But I mean, these cops are, we mentioned the couple that were making out. I mean, it seems like the only purpose of these cops is to...
Yeah, vice squad, bust the people. There's not even a make out point.
No, it's just a dusty field.
Yeah. The Mexican border.
Exactly.
A couple in a convertible Spider. And the guy's like chugging... From a
bottle,
yeah,
whiskey or whatever.
And he's got this satchel. He's chugging. So instead of busting them for DUI, they
or
bust them for
drinking,
yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows how old they were?
Yeah.
They bust them for just the offense of
making out.
Yeah,
and that happens at least 3 or 4 times
yeah
in this movie. So.
and again, they serve zero purpose to the narrative.
Let's talk about the crux of the narrative. So, at one point, the family does meet up with this couple that's been, these JDs, these juvenile delinquents, we can't have any making out in this wholesome town. But anyway, and they do ask for directions, but the couples have no help. And they end up just driving, and they come upon this house with this... strange-looking fellow. He's a
manservant who shuffles around with a staff, and he sort of is like a kind of a Dust Bowl version of like Igor. So he's sort of hunched, and he's got a that sort of a floppy hat, like a prospector, an 1890s prospector, and his name is
Torgo.
I am Torgo. I take care of the place while the master is away. But the child, I'm not sure the master would approve. Or the dog. The master doesn't like children.
We only want to know where Valley Lodge is.
Which way do we go?
This is the man Friday who looks after the master. Yeah, we don't see the master for quite a few, interminable, sequences. At least 20 to 30 minutes.
The master doesn't utter his a word of dialogue until about 35 minutes into this film.
Yeah.
But Torgo, he's like, I take after the master, and then inexplicably, because it's broad daylight out, right?
Yeah, I guess the family figures that they have to, spend the evening at
Shea Master.
Yes, Shea Master.
Torgo, Torgo does not want to, he doesn't want them there. He's like,
he says the master doesn't like children.
Yeah, or the dog or whatever. And the patriarch, Michael's like, well, can we please stay here? And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, this Torgo cannot be more shady looking.
Yeah, I mean, better to just run out of gas in the middle of the,
I'm sure they would have driven. I don't care where they are.
Yeah.
Wherever you are in the United States, you're on a highway.
Yeah,
you
you'll
drive
find
a few more miles.
Rest stop,
you're going to find a Motel 6. You're going to find a friend, Howard Johnson's. You'll find something. If anything, sleep in your fucking car.
Yeah.
Don't stay at, Shay the Master.
Yeah.
Run by this nefarious, weird country goat boy named Torgo, with a floppy hat and a beard, who's saying, "Oh, well, the master wouldn't like you, but come on in."
So then
Torgo offers him some hospitality, and poor Torgo is like this crippled little fellow, what can only be described as the Torgo theme, this weird jaunty little tune.
Yeah, weird peppy music. We were talking about Peppy the dog, but there's like a peppy score here too. Every time he hauls the couple's bags,
he becomes the bellhop.
he's obviously disabled and quite short and stocky, but he's the master's manservant, and he does his bidding. And there's also, I guess, an interesting sort of strange bebop score. So it alternates between, again, that peppy
Torgo theme
and like Gershwin mixed with like a little bit of Ella Fitzgerald and a little bit of like Charlie Parker bebop jazz. This thing is very odd.
Yeah, no, the soundtrack.
This is a 1966 film, so it's right in the middle of that era for jazz, for the bebop anyway.
If they were to reissue Manilow's Hands of Fate, soundtrack on vinyl, I'd pick it up, man. It was a pretty good little soundtrack, good peppy score.
Yeah.
And
then we find out a little bit about the master, because there's some artwork on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that he loves Dobermans. We see this creepy portrait where this, the master looks a little bit like, I think we said, a cross between Edgar Allan Poe, Freddie Mercury, and Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
So he's got these piercing eyes. He's got this V kind of Bela Lugosi hairdo. And he's got these ominous eyes.
Well. Yeah. He's got, of course, he's got like sort of like the bushy Portsar stash.
Yeah.
But he's also sort of a god fellow as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this very unique robe that he wears.
It's I guess the two hands, I guess, from the titular hands. And when he spreads out his arms, then he spreads these open palmed hands, the two thumbs meeting in the middle at his groin.
Yeah.
It's really off-putting, but bizarre rope.
And he wears sandals.
Yeah.
Typical era, like
very
Calvin Heston in like Ten Commandments type sandals.
Very demonic sartorial sandal.
But before the master wakes up proper, because he's basically sleeping in the basement, a la like Bela Lugosi or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the manservant says that he's passed on, that he's no longer with us. So, the family is led to believe that, first that he's alive, and then as soon as they enter into the premises, he's passed on.
And
very bizarre.
Meanwhile, the family, the wife doesn't want to be there, and so And okay, let's leave, and then I'll, and then they go out to the car, and the car won't start.
Naturally, yeah.
And poor Torgo, again, to Torgo's theorist, like, think their bags back to the car, yeah. And they're back in again, and it's ludicrous. But anyway, the daughter is just like, you know, she's just sleeping on the couch,
yeah,
most of the time, and
I think his Peppy absconds from the home. And disappears into the desert night in Texas and yep. gets eaten by something, presumably, or killed.
The father
or,
finds Peppy dead.
Yeah.
Peppy's dead.
It's by, I don't know what means, but yeah. And he carries it away very unconvincingly.
Yeah, we don't know where
this is like a 30-pound dog, and he just lifts it up with one hand as if it's nothing, and I don't know where he takes it, but... Anyway.
Yeah, but then there's also the, I guess, the subplot, if you can say that, because there's really no plot, but, yeah. I mean, the master's got, like, seven wives, and they're yeah. all in this somnambulistic state in the basement.
Yeah, wearing a billowing white robes.
Very,
yeah.
Diaphanous.
Yeah,
With,
you know, a little bit of bra showing, a little bit of panties. You know. This is 1966, a little racy, yeah.
So, but our poor Torgo, I mean, I gotta keep saying poor Torgo. I mean, this guy just gets used and abused, and, you know, he's you know, hunched and crippled. He's got these weird goat-like legs, and he's, you know, all he wants is a woman. And, I mean, the master's got, like, eight women, and he wants the wife. He wants...
Yes, he wants the missus, yeah.
Yeah, and Torgo says this to her, but, and of course, she's very, very... offended by this, but then
slaps him a couple times across the you know.
But then Torgo says, "I want you, master. You have like eight wives. Yeah. Why can't I have one?" No.
And poor Torgo, you know, he's rebuffed. And given that this is Texas, this is America, you know, the man there, Mike, he's got a service revolver, I guess, or something. He's got some pistol in the glove compartment of his car. He takes that out, and he starts milling about the darkness. And, you know, at one point, I guess they lose their daughter, and he just, you know, he's looking around for her, and at one point gets clubbed in the back of the head by Torgo mm-hmm. and tied to a stake or a tree or
yeah.
something.
And the daughter was found with the large dog that was depicted in the
portrait. Yeah. Yeah. So and yeah.
And then so about, like I said before, about 35 minutes in, we actually the master awakens and he prays to Manos, and Manos is the great god now.
It looks a little bit like a. It's like a robotic silver Frankenstein.
Very bizarre.
Yeah.
Very, very bizarre. And, you know, the master... So, I mean...
So Manos. Manos means hand
Manos
in Spanish.
Manos means hands in Spanish.
So the title of this is Manos, Hands of Fate.
So
the
hands of Fate. Yeah. And, I mean, I guess the leitmotif of this movie would be hands. I mean,
yeah.
because there's, like, there's a stone sculpture of a hand, and then Torgo, I mean, later on, he loses a hand, and, like, the... Hands are very, you know,
yeah.
you know, of course.
And there's a very annoying score with constant tinkling of the ivories. Yeah. Bang, ding, ding,
yeah,
ding.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway.
yeah, the master emerges from his slumber.
When he awakens, so does his wives, and then all of a sudden it becomes an episode of The View.
I mean, you've got a bunch lots of women. Of bickering, yeah. Lots
around.
Of yenting and,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
you know, malcontent.
Yeah.
Not happy with their status as one of many wives.
Nor are they
what
happy
they should
to,
do. Yeah, nor are they happy with this interloper here.
Yeah,
and, you know,
yeah,
with
yeah.
an extra woman maybe
yeah.
being introduced to the fold.
I mean, it. You know, in theory, it sounds like having eight wives. You know, sounds great. But
yeah.
in practice, you know, I don't
yeah,
know
not so much. Yeah. And then so, there's a constant to do and much discussion made of what should be done with Debbie, the young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And repeatedly, they say she will grow up to be a woman, which stands to reason as she's a girl. But anyway.
Girl,
you'll be
a
woman
soon.
Yeah.
Neil Diamond knew that. They should know
yeah,
that too,
I guess
yeah.
there's a little bit of a debate concerning whether they should maybe sacrifice her, or maybe that was the point. I don't know.
Right.
So they don't know what to do with, you know,
and then,
with
yeah,
the wife or the daughter.
Yeah,
they're bickering.
Yeah,
and
then there's some catfighting.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. There's some, you know,
they're rolling around in the sand.
In their diaphanous robes, yeah, in the sand. Yeah, and again, this is an interminable thing. I mean, yes, you know, it could be provocative, but it just goes on and on,
on and on.
On
but
and
there's
on.
Some great speeches, you know, as we said, like the master has got a bit of a great dictator, like Charlie Chaplin kind of
yeah.
vibe to him, and this, you know, ridiculous mustache and comb forward hairdo,
yeah.
and he gives these sort of grand hammer horror type corny speeches. Mm. So this you know, for a movie that was made for $20,000,
yeah.
yeah, you could do a lot worse.
Well, it's really bizarre because, I mean, adding to this too, I mean, this movie was shot with a handheld camera. They could only shoot 32 seconds of film at a time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's all these bizarre edits, right, that just have no continuity at all because, you know, you're shooting 32 seconds putting it together. It was filmed without sound.
Yeah, so you see there's several instances where the characters' mouths are moving and they're just nothing happening.
Well, yeah, so...
They missed a few, like...
They had two male actors and one female actor dubbing the dialogue. So basically this poor woman had to, like, you know, mime voice... Like, at one point, the girl's voice is just like this high-pitched, like, oh, it's really, really ridiculous. And the other fun thing that's purported, I mean, is that the actor who played Torgo was flying high in acid the entire time that they were shooting, which, I mean, he is, like, he definitely looks fucked. Like, he looks out of it for the majority of that movie, would you not say?
He's definitely out of it, so it had a bit of a trip, like a Dennis Hopper kind of,
Jack Nicholson
kind of thing. Interesting.
But, I mean, like, look, I mean...
Maybe this would improve if we were under the same
influence. I think so, my God. Or be... fucking horrifying, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the shots are so... They're not framed, I mean. There's one scene where, like, the master's head is cut off.
Yeah.
Like, he's, like, berating Torgo in the corner. Because, you know, he's not happy that Torgo wants
his own wife. So, yeah there's an internecine struggle between the manservant and the master.
And he's berating Torgo, and Torgo's, like, slumped in the corner, ostensibly sleeping it off or something. And, you know, looks like he's, like, you know, sleeping off a hangover. And, you know, so poor Torgo's in the corner, and the master, like, literally from, like, nose up is, like, gone. The frame is lopped off, and it's technically pretty...
Technically, yeah.
But there's interesting shots, too. I mean, there's a few, like, I don't know, like, there's some sort of competence there within the incompetence. I think we pretty much described the plot. I mean, you got the master who basically Manos is his god, and he's got many wives, and he wants to take another wife, and he's got his manservant Torgo, and they got a family who, for some weird reason,
ends up in the middle of nowhere with a car that won't start,
and begs to stay at the master's house, and then Kind of a cool little ending. I'm not gonna spoil it. But I did enjoy the ending. It was a kind of an interesting and almost I would say controversial in a sense.
Yeah, a little bit.
But we won't say much more about that. So Manos has a fate. I mean, again,
how many fingers out of this hand?
Oh my lord! Well, yeah. So
the solid three.
Two and a half stars. I mean, or two and a half.
An interesting, extremely low budgeted curiosity.
Yeah, it's you know, like, look, again, this is a bad movie, but I mean, those of you know, if you're listening to this podcast, I think you have an affinity for bad movies as we do, and you know, I mean, yes, there are interminable stretches of nothingness, but if you have your finger on the fast forward button for the endless scenes of just driving, you'll get a kick out of Manos. So I'm going to give it 2.5 stars. Now, what did you learn from this masterpiece of cinema?
They should have gotten, I think you mentioned, Peter Lorre and Vincent Price, because they have these sort of unreliable stand-ins for these two guys. And at one point, the master sounds Vincent Price-esque, but... Yeah, they don't have the gravitas to pull it off.
Yeah,
so we're left with these two-bit players here.
Yeah,
you know,
if it would have been the master played by the great Vincent Price.
Yeah,
And Torgo
maybe
played by
Roger Corman money
the
behind this thing.
Yeah, and the wonderful Peter Lorre done by AIP. This could have been something.
Yeah.
This could have been something.
Maybe Bing Crosby as Mike, who knows? Anyone with your generic sweater and hiked-up pants.
What I learned is that, honestly, don't trust a guy named Torgo.
No, a guy shuffling about with a hunchback and a staff in the middle of nowhere, ushering you inside.
Don't trust him, and don't ask to spend the night.
Yeah,
you know, especially when he doesn't even want you there, and he makes it very clear, you know, and if the home is owned by somebody named the Master, that's usually a pretty bad omen.
Yeah.
And if your wife is saying, you know, honey, I don't really feel comfortable here. Listen to your wife.
Take the cue.
Sometimes, I mean, I know in the '60s, it was a little more of a patriarchal society, you know, but. But at this point, I think Mike should listen to his wife. I learned that. I've yet to meet anybody else named Torgo, but I will.
No.
Have you?
Nor Manos.
But I will say that I really like Torgo. He's a good character.
He's great.
I would love to get a Torgo T-shirt.
Yeah. Or a master's red hand T-shirt based on the robe.
Shit, I would even get a robe. I would buy a robe based on if I can get a robe just like the master wore. I would walk around my apartment
wearing sandals.
Not outside, hopefully.
Yeah, you never know. But yeah, I would feel pretty cool, you know? So, yeah, Manos. We liked it.
We liked it, and if you like that, there's more where that came from. Really awfulmovies.com. Check us out Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.